Hey guys, Kyle Tully with the Consulting Tycoon Podcast. In this episode, I'm talking with my buddy Omar Kafaji about procrastination, productivity and effectiveness, how to avoid productivity porn, and his unique take on using Evernote to be more effective in your day-to-day life.
Your Facebook, your Twitter, all of that stuff can be used to hack yourself in a way. I hate to use the phrase hack yourself because it sounds so like I'm starting to get tired of that phrase, but like it is kind of hacking yourself, or at least bringing a strong sense of self-awareness when you stop looking at it like the user and start looking at it like the business. Like look at it from Facebook's perspective. What are they seeing about you? It lets you detach yourself and gives you a really clear idea of who you are. Like I'm looking through my own newsfeed right now. The first person I see is a person I interact with all the time online. The second thing I see is an article from IO9, which is a science fiction blog, right? Then the next thing is a person who's messaged me a few times. I'm not a huge fan of like I don't talk to her a lot, but she messages me and I have yet to click on the right-hand side and say unfollow, right? I'll get there eventually. And then the next thing is life hacker. And then the next thing is like, and so on and so forth, right? But like Engadget, TechCrunch, like I see more fan page stuff than I see people, in large part because some of the people that have been popping up all the time, I've hidden them. And the people that I talk to, I don't talk to online.
Yeah.
Right. So it gives you an indication, right?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the perfect real life example of you creating your own reality. You know, it really is that your own inputs into the world are what creates, you know, the stuff that comes back to you. And Facebook's kind of the perfect example of that because it's literally based on what you do on Facebook is what gets back to you on Facebook. And it's kind of the funny thing about it is the longer you spend on there, the more almost self-centered it becomes because you only see stuff from people who like you or from, you know, people that you like. You keep seeing things that you've interacted with and they start weeding out things that you haven't interacted with. And so over time, all you see is stuff that you agree with and you become almost, you know, more insular in your thinking because it seems like as far as Facebook's concerned, everyone else has the same thoughts and feelings and everything as you do.
Right, exactly. And it's, I mean, like people keep talking about how you should optimize or change your environment to change who you are. And they'll do these things like changing how their kitchen looks like or changing their bedroom or changing their office or whatever. But the thing that they always forget about, and I don't blame them because frankly, our brain is not designed to understand the reality. Like we don't really understand virtual windows. They're a metaphor based on things we have experienced, like pages. They're a metaphor. But that doesn't mean that we totally grasp them. So we don't look at our Facebook and our Twitter and the way that our icons are set up on our screen or any of that stuff and really recognize, unless you bring it right to your attention, someone tells you that that's a reflection of your environment. That is your environment. You spend a lot of time staring at it, right? So you can change that. Like if you find yourself thinking too much about fitness and about wellness, then get rid of all the Twitter stuff that you've been following or all the Facebook stuff you're following where it just kind of perpetuates your self-consciousness for what, right? Like what are you really getting out of that? Is it really making you a healthier person? Maybe, maybe not. So you can use it for good. You can use it for bad. But at the end of the day, you have to be aware that it is a tool. And the same thing ends up happening with Evernote. It happens with almost every single tool I've ever seen. People get so involved in it that they end up living their lives within the tool instead of like using the tool to improve their lives.
Yeah, I like that.
It breaks them.
It's right? Funny, the most scattered person I ever knew, I had a look at her desktop one day and the entire desktop had icons over it. It was like she didn't know how to use the folders on her computer and the entire desktop was literally, you couldn't have fit another icon on there. It was just icons, icons, icons. And then you'd have a browser open and the browser would be crashing because there were so many tabs open. And I think it's a perfect reflection of what was going on inside her head as it was manifesting inside the computer.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, I can be pretty bad for it too, especially when I'm in research mode. Like I'll have a browser window open and there's like 20 tabs. And I mean, clearly that's not being useful. And I know it's not, right? But the point, like, again, like I have a very different, you know, people always talk about productivity in terms of do's and don'ts. And I'm like, well, okay, let's screw the do's and don'ts. Do's and don'ts is for a perfect world. We're not robots. So why don't we instead develop habits of self-awareness. When you notice that your tabs are like, there's a lot of tabs, recognize that that is a symptom of you overthinking something, or maybe you're getting too lost and you're not finishing the task you started on, right? Maybe you should take a step away from the computer. Maybe you should close the tabs or find out what you want to do with them and walk yourself through it. That's the only way you're ever going to overcome it, because it's a thought pattern, right?
That's huge. I think it's about self-awareness. I remember probably 10 years ago when I was kind of first getting serious about business, I would have days where I felt like I was so busy the entire day, and I'll get to the end of the day and I'd look back and feel like I hadn't really done anything at all. But I hadn't stopped any time throughout the day to think about what I was doing. I was just stuck in the moment of doing what I was doing and being busy and everything, and I wasn't getting anything done. And it was only when I learned to become a bit more aware, I guess, of what I was doing, what thoughts I had and everything like that, that I could step back and analyze what I was working on, figure out, am I being productive? Am I procrastinating? You know, what direction am I moving in?
Yep. And it's not easy either. Like, it really isn't. Like, people talk about it like it's easy. Here's a system. You can do this. This is the blueprint. You can do this. But if it was easy, then we'd all be able to do it, right? It takes this constant vigilance that can be exhausting. So yeah, no, I love taking things from a psychological approach and really trying to solve things within that context and say, okay, who am I naturally? What do we know about the human mind? What do we know, if not through psychology, what do we know through history, right? Through philosophy, through like religion, through whatever. What do we know about people? Because those things are reflections of people and they haven't changed that much, that we can then use to improve our lives, right? And the tools that we're using. And I'm constantly revising. Like, I started from a place of the most disorganized person you'll ever know. And I'm still like scattered. Like, I'm not perfect, but I'm also the only person I know who can find any manual for any piece of technology in the house, along with every receipt that has to do with that piece, like with that tool, right? So, you know, there's things you learn in pieces.
Sure. So speaking of like productivity, when most people think of productivity, or they identify maybe that they've been procrastinating or they're not being very productive in what they're doing, most people's kind of first thought is, okay, I need a system, or I need a tool. I need to go out and, you know, learn the GTD system. I need to get Evernote and figure this thing out. And that then, you know, in my opinion, becomes a bit of its own version of procrastinating. You know, they go in and they're now focused on the tool or the system.
Totally.
And what's your take on that? How do you think people should be approaching?
Oh man. Yeah. I make the crazy thing is I make the same mistake. Like, I'll catch myself doing it. I'm like, okay, why am I doing this? And I think that it comes from a place of anxiety and it comes from a place of fear. And the fear changes depending on the person, right? Nobody has the same fear, but there is a fear. In my case, it's a fear like I need to be able to see everything that's going on in my life all at once, right? So it's this feeling of not having control. And so my philosophy on that is, first of all, what I like, you know, talking about like Twitter and cultivating, you know, an environment that suits you, right? So if you're a Twitter user or a Facebook user, look and see how many of the things you like showing up on your Facebook profile or showing up in Twitter are related to productivity, and unsubscribe. I know that that's going to piss off a lot of people who would rather that, you know, like all the people who are actually, what's it called? Like, they're the ones selling the products, right? Or selling the software, and be like, hey, Omar, why are you telling people to unsubscribe? We're offering solutions and we're offering help. But like, true, but 3,000 people offering you help is not helping you. That's like finding somebody in the street who's bleeding and everyone's giving them advice all at once. Shut up, put your hand over the wound and leave it at that, right? Like don't overwhelm the person, right? And of course, it's not actually the people who are standing around who are overwhelming him. It's that he's chosen to be overwhelmed, right? He surrounded himself with this stuff. So first, I'd start there. Like, cut some of it out. Do you really need all of it? Because every piece of advice you get is going to send you down a new rabbit hole, right? So pull it, like refine it, and say, okay, do I need that? Do I need this? Do I really need this? And start to sort of clean things up, because most of that's really basically productivity pornography. It excites you. It makes you feel like there's potential, and you start imagining like the promise of perfect efficiency and productivity, running like a machine, and it's such a sexy idea, it's totally unrealistic. Like, even the most productive people I know, if you saw them, you'd crap yourself. They're not that organized. And the most organized people I know spend all their time organizing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Like the most naturally productive people never talk about productivity. They don't use any systems. They don't know any of this stuff. They're just naturally productive. They get stuff done. You know, they've figured themselves out and they just do stuff. It's the people who struggle the most with this who are attracted to it. And that was certainly, you know, why I was attracted to this stuff is because I'm naturally the laziest person in the world. And if there was any reason for me to, you know, take a day off, I would do it. And I quickly realized in business when, you know, the buck stops with you, that doesn't really work too well. So I started digging into all this stuff and I certainly went through that as well. You know, when I first learned about the getting things done system, I spent probably a good solid day learning the system and then another, you know, whole weekend mapping out my entire life inside the software. And, you know, by the time you finish with that, you're exhausted and you feel like you deserve a break. So you take the next week off.
Totally. And, like, you know, I think that the other thing is that I think that people want to optimize the thing that they feel they can have the most control over, right? So if you're trying to optimize your computer, the computer feels controllable. Like you used to have, like, wasn't your background, like, as a programmer in the past? Like, you used to develop, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you understand really well that you can develop solutions. You can make the computer do things, and you know the rules and the parameters and, like, what your limitations are. And frankly, if you really know what you're doing on a computer, your limitations make you look like a god to anybody who's never touched a computer, right? Because you know how to do everything on it. But with the brain, those limitations aren't as clear cut. What you can do to optimize the brain isn't as obvious, and it takes longer to take effect. So there's no instant gratification. It's a lot. Like, to develop a process to give your brain a program, you have to introduce one line at a time per day, per hour, per whatever. It's not like you can just insert the program and it works in your brain. You have to introduce one method at a time, one process at a time, and then it starts to learn things. But if you don't start there, no system is going to really work. So, like, with GTD, people will read this book, right? They'll read the whole book. They'll implement it. Like you said, they'll get exhausted, and then they're going to go back to that book over and over and over again. But realistically, though, they're going to maybe have one or two pieces that really stick in their heads, and they're going to implement that, and it's going to become a habit. And the most important part of the entire book is the habit. It's the habit of the daily review. It's the habit of the weekly review. It's the habit of the monthly review. Those are the most important habits. The book ideally should set you up to let go, but people cling to the book because it's a safety blanket, right? So it like, to me, the way I've started to look at it is I want to build my confidence. And the big part of building my confidence is relying on the first piece of technology I was ever given, which is my own brain.
Yeah. And the tricky thing is that, you know, when you're trying to, and I hate to use the word, but when you're trying to hack your own brain, it's,
yeah,
you're thinking with the thing that you're trying to hack. And so you've got to be very aware of the thoughts that are coming up and everything like that, because it's like working on a tool set with your own tool set. It can become quite a tricky little process to grasp.
Right. Totally. Which is why, like, I take this sort of approach where I say, okay, I'm not working on me today. I'm working on me in a week from now. What can I do for myself today that a week from me, like Omar, you know, in 7 days is going to look back and say, oh, thanks for doing that. Right. So it makes me feel removed enough to not feel like I'm working on my own brain. Right. And it also makes me aware, like, okay, I'm overcomplicating things. Could I really teach this to another person? Cause I can't actually imagine future Omar. Like, you think you can, right? You're like, oh, basically looks like me, but, you know, maybe he can shave for a week, right? In your case, for a month. Or how's your majestic beard looking now?
It's scarily long at the moment.
Okay, so maybe 6 months. But yeah, like, I don't really know what future Omar looks like. I don't even know if future Omar is going to be alive. Like, what do we really know, right? So I've created a character. A character with my basic traits, or I imagine to be my basic traits. if I had to teach this to him, is he really going to know how to do it? If the answer is no, I'm going way too deep.
I really like that future focus, because I mean, to bring it back to a very sort of practical example, you know, I, you know, teach consulting stuff and teach people how to start a consulting business. And, you know, I've lost count over the years of the people who've come to me and, you know, they're struggling financially. They've been, you know, doing the internet marketing thing for 2 to 3 years. They're, you know, up to their eyes in credit card debt. They come to me and they're like, oh, I need to make money this week. You know, what thing can I do so I make money this week? And it's that, you know, constant focus of, you know, how can I instantly change myself from being completely unsuccessful to being amazingly successful and suddenly getting myself out of this hole, you know, in an instant. And I think that's the cause of a lot of people's problems, is they're looking for this instant solution, whether it's a, you know, a productivity system or a marketing system or a business plan or whatever it happens to be, when the answer is, you know, lifelong personal development. It's one step at a time. It's one foot in front of the other. It's not going to be an overnight change. And it's the same with, you know, productivity tools. You're not going to suddenly find this system and go from not getting anything done to suddenly, you know, getting a book done in the weekend or something crazy like that.
Yeah,
it's typically going to be a you know, a habit forming process, like you said, and learning one skill, getting good at that, you know, falling over, getting back on the wagon and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, like, it's especially difficult for people because really what you're dealing with is fear. Like, at the core of it, it's fear. Like, if I try to keep myself organized, I'm afraid that I will be caught off guard. I'm afraid that I'm going to get overwhelmed and fall apart. I'm remembering things that have happened to me in the past, in which case it may be a valid fear, right? Or I'm imagining what could happen in the future because I've never gone up against something like this before, and it's scaring me. So that's really more of an anxiety, right? Because it's not like it actually, perhaps I'm overblowing it, right? So maybe I'm overblowing that fear. Like, at that point, it's an anxiety. It's just this feeling of looming doom, and it can set people into this depressive sort of cycle, like, I've been there, I've done that. So I know exactly how thought patterns begin. And I think that one of the most important things that anyone can really do is take a really far view of your own life. And it seems almost depressing because it's so short, right? But recognize that you're part of this continuum. You're not like just one person. You know, there's going to be people after you. And you, by going so broad and by looking at, even for just a minute, by looking that broad and saying, oh, this is where I belong, like, this is where I play on the timeline of human history, and recognizing sort of getting a little bit of perspective, and then saying, okay, now that I know that, now that that's how I understand how the world sort of sees me, or where I play, where I fit in, I can zoom in and say, okay, now that I know I don't really have an idea of how the future is going to even play out, what can I do right now that's not going to just make my life better, but it's going to improve maybe the 5 people closest to me? And how can I just simply learn to trust that if I take care of these things now, me in about a year from now is going to be okay, is going to be happier? What's the one or two small things I can do that will have the biggest impact in that tiny little frame? Don't worry about changing the world. Don't worry about, like, how you're going to make the biggest impact. And I know that can be some kind of, like, I guess, controversial advice, because people love to talk about, like, oh, you can change the world and you can make things better and you can, you know, you're going to leave a ding in the universe, to quote, you know, like the Steve Jobs thing. But before you leave a ding in the universe, try to leave a ding in your, like, in your house, right? like start there. Like, charity starts at home is an overused cliche, but start there. Be nice to you. you're the only you've got.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's driven from uncertainty. People are extremely hesitant to take action on stuff when they're unsure of what the outcome's going to be. You know, they're looking for the one definite path, the one thing that, you know, if I spend a week or a month or a year working on this, it's going to work. And that's why, I guess, you know, con men are extremely attractive to people, because they're promising certainty. And it's one of the, I think, one of our core kind of drivers is wanting to be certain about things. And I've certainly seen it in my business with, you know, coaching students and everything. And it's certainty that they're looking for. And often I'm, you know, I've got to kind of break it to them that, look, I'm uncertain of things. You know, I've got a whole bunch of things we can test and we can try. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a process of figuring out what's going to work for you, what isn't, and just, you know, continually improving upon that.
Yeah, and people don't like to hear that either. It's such a, because, you know, I guess, because I've been there too, right? Like I've read books by internet marketers and writers and, you know, all these different like walks of life, right? And I guess I initially hated to hear that someone didn't have the answer, because at some level I felt that they were lying to me. Like, You have the answer. Don't be a dick. Like, you've got the answer. You're just hiding it from me because you're a jerk or something. And then I guess there's the other part too, which is, and this is like, I guess, sort of a deep psychological thing, right? What if it's true that they don't have all the answers and yet they still made it? What does that say about you? Yeah, right?
That's
it hurts. Like, it hurts. It kills the ego. You're sitting there going, oh man, he did this and he didn't know. Now, some people will brush off and say, oh, it was just luck, it was whatever. But was it just luck? How many times did they get lucky? Right? Maybe it isn't luck. Maybe it's that they have a, like sort of like a martial art, right? They're ready. They're prepared. And they're calm. That's the thing. Like, if you've ever watched like a really, you know, experienced martial artist, they're calm. They're ready, but they're not ready until the moment strikes where they need to be ready. They're just flexible. They're waiting, and they're okay with waiting. Like, that's the biggest thing. You have to be okay with waiting, waiting for your habits to take effect, waiting for money to come through the door, waiting for someone to reply to your email. That was, you sent a sales pitch out and now you're like, okay, is anybody going to get back to me? Oh my God, what if nobody opens my email? Like, you got to learn to be okay with waiting.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, I think we look at the future and it always seems far away. It's like, you know, you imagine 6 months and it just seems so far away. And it's, you know, planning for 6 months, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be, what I'm going to be doing. It feels so difficult. When I look back 12 months though, it seems like yesterday. And I think that's what people need to understand is, you know what, the next 6 months are going to go by no matter what. If you've been struggling for the past 6 months or the past 2 years or the past 6 years, then, you know, realize that the next 6 months are going to go by, whether you decide to work on yourself or not, and you can continue doing what it is you've been doing, you know, chasing the instant solutions, chasing the overnight change, and you've already experienced where that's got you, or you can decide to start planning for the future and start making those small daily habit changes that are going to, you know, give you the result in 6 months' time. And I guarantee when you look back 6 months from now, you realize how quickly the change actually happened, even though it doesn't feel like 6 months is going to be a quick change right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, again, like I think that this comes in large part due to an anxiety that is at least partially created by 1,000 success stories, none of which are you. Right? Like you're sitting there reading a book after book after book. And I know people, they get on the self-help, like they get on the self-help addiction train, right? And they're like, okay, I finished this book and I'm high from this book. I feel excited about life. I'm motivated. And then 2 weeks later, they feel like crap again because the book didn't change their life, right? It never was going to. So they move on to the next book and the book repackages the same idea with a slight twist, or maybe it's a completely opposite book because the first book didn't do it for you. So you figure you need to go in the total opposite direction. And then you pack your brain with so much crap. At what point are you supposed to change when you're sifting through all that junk, right? Like your friend with all the folders on her screen, where do you start with that? Right? You have to take one folder at a time. You have to make a decision about every folder. Decisions take energy. If you ever felt exhausted spending like an hour being creative, there's a reason. You just spent an hour saying yes or no to a million ideas. That's hard. Do I add that in? Do I put that word in that headline? Yeah. Okay. Now how about no? Maybe not. Okay. How about this one? Yes. Like if you keep changing these tiny little details, you're going to get exhausted, and there's science that backs that up, right? So yeah, it's like, it's just this, I guess I have a very holistic approach to it now where I look at And I also hate the word holistic, but because what the hell does it really mean? But like, it's holistic because it involves the whole mind and all aspects of your life. But I guess what I really want to convey by that is to say, like, it's a calmer, bigger picture view, and to say, okay, I have a limited number of hours. I have a limited amount of energy, and I accept that I'm going to have to do the time it required to get this task or like this thought, not thought, like habit in place. It's going to take me time. So I got to get into it, but slowly, and be okay with that. Be kind with that, and not let fear run the show. Right. So yeah, anyway.
Yeah. So I think coming back just to the success stories thing, and
yeah,
again, in my business, this is something that comes up a lot, you know, because I'm, you know, teaching people how to create a business and how to make more money and stuff like that. And you'll have people who they're too focused on everyone else's success stories. And what you need to understand with that is you only really hear about the success stories. You know, the people who fail don't tend to report back and say, well, I failed, you know, tell people about my story. It's the people who are massively successful who come back and they're like, oh man, I love this. Here's what I did. Here's how it worked. And they're the ones who get the attention. So you're only hearing about the success stories. You're not hearing about people who failed or people who, you know, didn't try or people who, you know, failed once and then gave up kind of thing. And the other side of that is even with the success stories themselves, you don't hear about people's struggles, or people will hear the struggle, but they don't really hear the struggle. You know, because when you hear it in a narrative, you know, when you hear about the guy who failed at three different businesses and then, you know, came out and created Facebook or something like that, it just sounds like a nice, you know, step, create Facebook. And you don't really, people don't put themselves in the experience of having those failures, because for every guy who failed three times and then created Facebook, there's probably 10,000 people who failed once and quit. And there's another 5,000 people who failed twice and quit. And there's another, you know, 1,000 people who failed three times and then quit, because you've got to go through that experience of actually doing it and coming out the other side stronger. And so you've got to be really careful when you look at other people's success and understand that, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on behind the scenes. And I think when you look at the most successful people out there, whether it's, you know, successful people in relationships or business or whatever area you want to look at, they've gone through their own process of getting to that point. You know, it was a learning experience. It was a process. It wasn't an event that they suddenly woke up one day and did this thing. It was a lifelong process in most cases.
Yep. And in fact, it shows up again, like that process, like that idea of like those, you know, 10 years of silence, right? If you've heard that, idea, like the 10 years of silence, if I'm remembering it right.
I don't think I've heard 10 years of silence, no.
Okay. So the idea is that someone becomes successful, they show up on the scene, and like there's like a bunch of years where you never heard of this person, the lost years. But when they show up, like it's as if they were always there. To give a really, really like present day example of this in music and pop music, Ariana Grande. She's all over the top 40 list in Canada, and I think in the States too. She's everywhere. Where the hell was she? What was she doing for the last 10 years or 5 years or 4 years or however many years? The answer is you don't know and you don't care. She struggled. She slogged through, you know, failure. She went through all that stuff. That doesn't matter to you, because all you got at the end of it all was the song and the success at the end of it. Right? But to her, that was her day in and day out. That was her waking up in the morning wondering, okay, I love what I'm doing, but is it going to pay the bills? What do I have? Like, should I make this decision? Should I not make this decision? Is this guy trying to screw me over? Like, all these little things that are happening in her real life, maybe they'll show up one day on like a VH1 type special or on MTV, maybe. Like, maybe she'll show up then and tell her story. Maybe she'll write a memoir when her career wanes for a little while. Who knows? But we don't know and we don't care about those 10 years. And it happens in other places too, right? Like, you don't really hear about an athlete, you know, in the NBA when they're in like grade 8. Do you really hear about a grade 8 guy who's going to make it to the NBA? You might hear like talks from some kids in high school, but that's when they're coming up to the draft, right? Or if they really stand out. There's silence. And in that silence, you're cultivating, you're growing, you're being challenged, you're pushing. What we see is the tip of the iceberg, but to ignore the rest leads to disasters like the Titanic.
Yeah. Right? And I think that's why, you know, having a coach or some kind of mentor along the way can be really helpful, because that, you know, typically they've been there, they've done it before. They know what the process is, and they can kind of try and ground you a bit in what it's going to take and get you sort of get your head out of the clouds, I suppose. And
yeah,
from just looking at all the success stories and imagining, you know, you're going from your current position to that success story overnight. It's like step one, you know, change, step two, success. Not really sure what happens in between.
Yeah. Question marks, bunch of question marks in the middle.
Yeah.
You eat a sandwich, you wake up fine. Like all of a sudden you're rich, like something happens, you eat lunch and good, everything's good. No, I totally agree. And mentors actually, like, the thing I realize about mentors is that, you know, they're not there to tell you what to do. They're there to make you feel like someone's in your corner. And they're there to maybe offer you pointers on where to go next, because they have been there. But man, like trying to succeed on your own, you, like, people don't realize the solo successes, how many hundreds, if not thousands of people are actually behind the so-called solo success.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Right. They got teams, they got family, they got whatever. But they're there to support them. Like, not saying nothing of the software that they're using or the tools they're using, developed by hundreds of thousands of people. We all stand on the shoulders of others, right? Of the greats and maybe even the not so greats. We rely on them, right? So I guess, like, the one thing that I always, like, try to get across, and this is something that I always have to try and remind myself too, because I make the same mistake, is that, you know, I can relax a little bit on myself. I don't have to be so hard on myself. I just need to look at where I am now compared to where I was before and ask myself, am I doing everything that I should be doing? Have I done everything? Am I working my ass off? If the answer is yes, then I actually say, okay, maybe I should take a step back and relax a little and enjoy this. Actually, it reminds me, it's a bit of a tangent, but it reminds me of a video I saw of Neil Gaiman, the author Neil Gaiman. I'm sure you're familiar with him, right?
I know the name, yeah.
Okay, so he's like, to those who don't have never heard of him, like, he's a fiction author. Primarily, he wrote a comic series called Sandman, and he wrote a bunch of other stories as well. He's very well known in, especially in urban fantasy kind of genre. There's a particular line from his commencement speech where he says that Stephen King came up to him in the middle of his signing, a book signing of Neil Gaiman doing a book signing, and said, "This is really nice. Enjoy it." And Neil Gaiman says that that's the best piece of advice he was ever given. And he never took it. He didn't enjoy it. He wishes he could go back and enjoy those moments, because he was still scared about what's the next thing, what's the next thing, what's the next thing. I'm already succeeding. What do I do now? Right. So in general, if you're a creative person or you have any like inclination toward the arts, Neil Gaiman's commencement address is fantastic. He says some really interesting things. One of my favorite things he also says is something along the lines of, you don't have to be perfect to succeed. You basically need to be one of the, like, two of three things: on time, likable, or good. You don't have to be all three. Two of three is fine. And it's so true. Seriously, if you're on time and you're not very good, but you're likable, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. From a young age, I read, you know, a lot of books in general, but a lot of, you know, biographies and autobiographies and that. And that was one of my big takeaways, is that a lot of these people are severely flawed in one, if not many ways, yeah, and yet they still succeeded. And so I guess I learned from an early age that it wasn't about being perfect. You didn't have to be this, you know, Superman type of character or this, you know, perfect character that you kind of see in a film. But it's, you know, you can be successful no matter who you are or where you're at. And I think you mentioned earlier, you know, that's scary. That's a blow to the ego. If you're not where you want to be right now, there's no reason why you can't be or shouldn't be. And anything you come up with is just an excuse. And a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. A lot of people would rather, you know, say that someone got lucky, or say that, you know, well, they're there because of X, you know, because they've got a rich uncle, or their family's got money, or they were born smarter, or they're born in a different country, or whatever their excuse is. But
Right.
You know, you can look at any of those excuses and find countless examples of people who succeeded despite those, you know, same quote unquote valid reasons. And I think when you can come to terms with that and really lay your ego aside and say, okay, I'm not where I want to be. I'm not, you know, as productive as I want to be. I'm not making as much money as I want to be. And really own that. That's, you know, that's the first step in then changing and becoming different.
Right. And then, you know, like, I think also that, like, it is definitely the first step of changing. And it's also, I think, the first step of realizing that, at least to some extent, happiness is kind of a choice, right? It's a skill that you can choose to develop. And it comes from realizing, like, sure, maybe not everything is working the way it should be. And, you know, it's maybe like there's all these reasons why you think it should be going better. But if you have to face a reality like you're talking about and just say, okay, maybe I'm not where I want to be, but I can still get something done, then you have to make a choice about how you're going to feel about that. Are you going to feel upset and disappointed in yourself, or are you going to seek the happiness in it? Can I see where I'm going with that?
I totally agree with you. I think people who are often, you know, chasing money especially, they think that the money is what's going to make them happy. Or they've got some goal and they're like, when I achieve this, then I'll, you know, mean something, then I'll matter, then I'll be happy. And that's not how it works. There's psychological reasons for why that is. But I think also we're always moving the goalposts. You know, as soon as you hit a certain income level, suddenly that just feels normal and the goalposts have moved. And so you never really achieve what you want to achieve, because what you want to achieve is always changing. And so you've got to learn to be happy in the process, be happy in the day-to-day grind of whatever it is you're doing. And if you can do that, you know, you'll live a happy life no matter what direction you go in.
Yeah. And like the core to that is to just not compare yourself constantly. Like, it can help to compare yourself against where you were, but to sit there comparing against others is like a recipe for depression.
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of unhappiness in the world is born of that. And it's only getting worse these days, you know, with social media and the internet and Facebook, where, you know, everything, first of all, you're seeing the best of everything and you're seeing a lot more. You know, when I went on holiday, Facebook must have figured out that I was on holiday. And when I came back, it seemed like all I was seeing from other people was all their holiday photos. And it made me depressed that I had to come back home and I wasn't back on holiday. And that's kind of what social media and the internet in general kind of does, is it just puts the best of the best in your face constantly. And it feels like everyone else is just having the best time and everyone else is, you know, having massive success. And you don't see, you know, behind the scenes, you don't see the real story and you don't see the vastness of their experience that's, you know, only captured in a few holiday snapshots.
Yeah, totally. And like, there's also, you know, people are seeking freedom because they think they're going to get that freedom through finance, like through money. But, you know, you can be free from, like, inside yourself, right? Like, what are you trying to be free from? Free from public opinion, free from responsibility, free from, what are you looking for freedom from exactly? Because you were talking about, like, you're on vacation, you wish you were still on vacation, you're comparing yourself. But wouldn't a form of freedom be to say, you know what, I'm happy that they're on vacation, I'm glad they're enjoying themselves, I already enjoyed myself, and I'm going to go and get some work done so I can enjoy myself again next year.
Yeah, exactly. And I was being a bit facetious. I'm pretty good when it comes to that stuff. But that is the mindset of people. You know, you'll see probably the number one comment you'll ever see on someone's Facebook, like, vacation photo is "so jealous." That's what everyone writes, "so jealous." And I know a lot of the time, you know, it's almost a meaningless joke kind of comment. But at the same time, I think it's a reflection of how people truly feel.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, like, that's at the core of a lot of people adopting, like trying to adopt a new system for their workflow or for whatever, right? They're looking at what somebody else does and they're looking at what they're promising, which is upgraded effectiveness and efficiency. And they go, "So jealous. I wish I had that, like, clarity." And what you don't see in the background is that, sure, this guy has this system and he uses it. Doesn't it fall apart too? Oh, yep. Isn't that why he wrote the second book in his trilogy of productivity books? Oh, yep. Because he doesn't really have the answers, but he has to speak with a voice of authority to sound like he has the answers. you betcha, right? Like, it's just, it happens. And the sooner you kind of get to like look at it and say, okay, you know, I don't look at this guy negatively for promoting his stuff. I don't look at him positively for promoting his stuff. I just look at it as that's what it is. Now, what can I take from that and make my life better?
Yeah. On that topic, I know you're an Evernote guy, and you've, yep, you know, you've got your own systems and processes around that. And I know a lot of people out there, I know a lot of people who have tried to use Evernote, you know, to kind of manage their life or as some kind of productivity tool, and either get frustrated with it or it ends up becoming, you know, a productivity porn type of thing where it's all theory and never implementing. What's your approach using it? What's your sort of big picture strategy behind using a tool like that when it comes to productivity?
Okay, cool. So the way I approach this, and I'm really excited about this now because I feel like I got like this revelation within the last couple of months that has made me totally change the way I think of it and has made my life better. I don't know about my organization. I think my organization is almost the same, but it improved how I feel about it, made me less anxious. So basically, here's the way I think about it. My number one rule when trying to become more effective is do not automate anything unless you already do it manually, right? Or unless you know how to do it manually. Now, there's some exceptions to the rule where the automation has become so common that, like, and I can't think of an example, but I know that there are out there where the automation is just such a natural thing that knowing it manually isn't really useful and you'd be wasting your time. The automation itself is almost like doing it manually. But for a lot of people who are trying to create this workflow with Evernote and trying to say, okay, I'm going to create a billion notebooks and a billion tags, I'm going to apply these tags automatically and all this other fantastic stuff. Instead, I choose to look at Evernote and say, okay, what is the manual version or the analog version of this tool? And to me, that's a notebook, a scrapbook, actually, to be more specific. And so I envision the book as being a place where I might glue in something I've cut out. I might write in my thoughts, and I get to have unlimited space. So it's like the Mary Poppins bag of notebooks, if it was an analog tool, you know what I mean? Right? Like it's bottomless. So it's like that. And so the way I'll approach Evernote is I'll say, okay, I need a basic common notebook, right? Like a simple notebook where my default, this is the notebook I might keep, a small little notebook, maybe in my pocket or something, right? And in that, I'll write my thoughts, my ideas, whatever I'm not sure what I'm going to deal with yet. Almost think of it like a pocket, really, in general. I call that my inbox, and I add a little exclamation mark at the beginning of it so that it shows up at the very top of my list of notebooks. The next thing I have is an archive, and the archive has an asterisk next to it. And the archive is just a whole bunch of stuff. It's not particularly organized because I rely on the search feature. And this is the most important thing. If you only have those two things, you're already 10,000 times ahead of the average person. Because if you just stick to those really two basic things and think in terms of search, then you start to treat the notes as an extension of your brain and you don't come to rely on the technology to do things for you. You try to actually make connections with your notes. So for example, like I might capture something from a web browser that is like, let's say, an article, right, on something that is related to maybe something I'm writing right now, like a, I don't know, an article or something. So I'll hit on the Evernote extension and I'll save it to the inbox. I never save it straight to archive. I never save it straight to one of my other notebooks. It just goes right into the inbox. When I process it, I'm not processing it to figure out what tags go where. I'll do this usually in the evening, or I'll even leave it a couple of days if it's not something I need to worry about right away, right? Like what's it going to kill me if there's 15 notes in my inbox unprocessed? Meh, it's not a big deal, right? I practically live in Evernote anyway. If it was important, I would have noticed, right? So I'll go to the inbox, I'll find this note, and I'll add at the very top of the note what I think of as a paper trail. And it's just my personal thoughts on the article I found. So if I found that article on the like in my browser and I've saved it, I'll go there and I'll add my actual thoughts and reflections. I'm engaging with the piece of material I found, which makes it so that when I'm trying to think back, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember, I found this article. How do I find this thing again? Rather than trying to remember my taxonomy of tags and notebooks and all the other crap that, like, my brain doesn't work like that. I don't know very many people who do. And if you do, that's amazing. you're awesome. I wish I had that brain. I don't think that way. So I'll remember the stamp I placed on it, which is my little personal notes. Then I'll move it into my archive. And that way I know it's in my archive. I'll make sure I look at when it was created. So I'll glance at the date, right? I don't have to write it. I don't have to think of anything. I just look at the date and I use the search so that when I'm thinking back, I'm like, oh, I remember looking at the date. It was September, whatever, right? So these are these tiny little things. They don't seem like they're a big deal, but they're making the digital world more connectable to your brain. When you might write something down on a piece of paper and you're forming that connection because you're moving your hand across the page, and we now understand that that helps you develop almost like a mind map of where things are on the page, you have that advantage with a piece of paper. You don't have that advantage with the screen. So you have to create an artificial version of the same thing. By going through that kind of process, I've found that I'm better able to find things. Especially if in my notes, the notes are a little bit creative and I'm summarizing for my own purposes. So I might insert like a little joke or something to keep it light to talk in my own voice. So that's a very broad overview of how I think of Evernote. Like those are the three primary things: inbox, archive, and personal note at the top, or a paper trail.
Mate, I'll tell you what, I think what you've just described there is massive. I mean, at least for me, the way I, you know, think and approach Evernote, and certainly working with other people who've, you know, struggled with productivity and procrastination and stuff, who have tried to use Evernote as well, I think that kind of metaphor of, you know, an extension of your brain is really, really powerful. And there's two or three things I want to touch on there. The first is, you said, you know, you shouldn't automate something that you haven't got a manual process for. And I think from my experience, that's probably the first mistake people make with something like Evernote is, you know, they hear about this amazing tool for productivity and they download it and they open it up and it's like, okay, fix my problems.
Right.
And the problem is they haven't got a grasp on really what the problem is or how they currently deal with the process. And so when you're trying to automate something that you don't really have a process for, it's never going to work. Whereas like you said, if you know, can take an existing process you've got with notepads and pens and papers and, you know, a diary and all that kind of stuff and say, okay, here's my existing process. How can I put this into the computer and make it more effective? Now you're getting somewhere. Now you're actually, you know, automating something that is worthwhile doing, that's something you're doing manually. So I think that was a huge point. The second one is the concept of the paper trail and the concept of taking notes on your ideas or taking notes on why you captured something, why you're putting in Evernote. And I know people who've got, you know, probably multiple gigabyte Evernote documents and they can never find anything. They don't really know why anything's in there. They're clipping stuff. They just don't have a clue. It's like the guy at the seminar who you see taking a photo of every single slide. That's not the point of taking notes. You're much better off looking at, you know, the slide or looking at a piece of information and saying, okay, well, how would I apply this? And I think your idea of the paper trail is really the first step in taking or transitioning a thought into action. It's, you know, here's an article. What do I think of this article? Why am I taking notes on it? You know, for me, when I take a note, it might be as simple as I should model this. So I might take a screenshot of, you know, someone's opt-in funnel or something that's really unique, or I like the languaging they use. And my note might be as simple as, you know, model this for, you know, the next order form you write or something really simple like that. But now I've got context for that note. I know why I captured it and, you know, it's date stamped and everything. So you can see over time how your thoughts on these different things change. So, mate, I think that's absolutely massive. Just the metaphor of an extension of your brain. And it probably goes back to something that the reason most people are ineffective at using a tool like this is that they haven't actually mastered their own brain. They haven't mastered their own thoughts around this type of stuff. And so trying to automate something you haven't really got a grasp on is probably a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's actually, I think that you hit the nail on the head there. Like that is exactly the problem. And I'm not saying it as a person who's never dealt with it. I'm saying it as a person who has suffered from it. Like it is, you know, it's partially because you're sold the idea, right? You're sold the idea that you can get this tool, it's going to solve the problem, right? And it even describes your problem so well. It even, I mean, and hell, as a copywriter, I know exactly how they're even doing this, right? They're picking the language that you're thinking already in your head. Like, do you feel scattered? Like, you just can't seem to find any of your notes? What if I can make it so that you can find any piece of information, any thought you've had in your head since 2009 in a couple of keystrokes on your computer and send it off to the right people at the right time with barely a second thought? Right? Like, how
Where do I sign up?
Right? Like, how appealing is that? That sounds so sexy. But it's not the whole story. Because before you even implement such a system or such a software or any of these kind of like solutions, you got to know who you are in a sense. And by the way, like I'm going to take that back. I'm going to rewind a little bit there. I'm going to say you need to be thinking about that while you're implementing systems, because you need to be constantly thinking, you know, like am I doing what's right for me? Can I systematize this in a different way? You should challenge the system. You should make it fit for you. Like, to give my favorite example of a person who's one of the most effective people I know, even if he's not the person who remembers everything, he's very effective. My own dad. He keeps track of all his stuff, all his notes, on these little tiny square white pieces of paper that he keeps in his shirt pocket along with a gold cross pen. Right?
Love
super,
it.
Super manual. And by the way, my dad is, you know, his background is as an engineer and he works for IBM. Right? So it's, you know, he doesn't really do much programming stuff anymore, but you'll see him take out his piece of paper. He'll sit there with it in the palm of his hand. So he doesn't have like, there's no rings going through these pages, man. They're loose white papers. That's it. It's super manual, but guess what? He's writing it down, not because, like, I've never said, like, Dad, tell me about your productivity system. If I asked him that question, he'd blink his eyes at me like I was an alien. Because he's too busy getting stuff done to really think about the rest of it, right? And in fact, I had those conversations with my dad where he's like, son, what are you doing? Why are you spending all this time trying to figure this out? And I could not just get it through my head that the reason he's looking at it like a waste of time is because he's able to do everything he's been able to do. And he's one of the most effective people I know, despite the fact that he only hopped on the iPhone 4 bandwagon after his Palm Treo, his Treo 360 or 6 something or whatever the hell it was called, finally crapped out on him. He clung to that. And this is not a man who's not in the tech industry. He's in the tech industry, right? He didn't want to let it go. So like all this to say, like, you don't, you know, people lived for years without their phones. They lived for years without their computers. And I'm far from a Luddite. I'm talking to you on a Shure, like a microphone that's like $300 in front of a 27-inch iMac. Like, I'm not a Luddite, but I recognize the value of pulling back and saying, okay, what's my analog system look like? Do I even have one? What if all this was to go to hell in a handbasket? Could I recover? And when the answer was no, I peed myself a little and then figured things out, right? So, like, I think that with Evernote especially, like use it like a notebook. And do you even need a notebook? If not, why are you using Evernote? Like, don't try to make it something it's not. I know it works for some people, and I know that there's probably someone who's listening and thinking, but I use it for my to-do list. It works perfectly for me. Awesome. I can't keep my to-do list in a notebook. So that's probably why I don't put my to-do list in Evernote. Just kind of see what I'm saying, right? Like, I'll put that on a little Ring notebook maybe. If I was doing things manually, I'd actually probably adopt my dad's methodology, because realistically, how much can you fit into a tiny little square piece of paper? Not much, which means you're probably going to get it done.
Yeah. I think with a lot of this stuff, it's purely about figuring out what works for you. That's what it all comes down to. You know, for me, I work so much better with a pad and pen. And so my productivity system is really a journal. And that's my primary thing where I'm writing down my goals for the week. I'm writing down, you know, what I do each day. I'm writing down things I'm grateful for. At the end of the day, I review, you know, what I worked on, how I'm thinking, what I'm feeling about, all that kind of stuff. And for me, I use online tools such as Evernote more as a dumping ground for ideas. You know, if I'm working on a new product and I'm doing research, or if I'm writing copy, you know, I'm capturing ideas, I'm dumping things in there, and it's more of a like you said, an extension of my brain, an extension so that I don't have to think about all this stuff, but I know it's safely stored away in there. But when it comes to actually taking action on that stuff, I will take notes from my Evernote and write them down on paper, and then that becomes my action plan for the week.
Right. But what I've kind of done with Evernote, since I know that like I'm not likely to take out that notebook and write it by hand, because of the fact that I really can't read it, like genuinely cannot read it the next day, I said, okay, well, what can I do with the tools I already have? That's really important. Like, don't adopt a new tool. If you already have tools, figure out whether or not that tool can bring it in a practical way. Don't shoehorn it in. Just look at it. It's almost like looking at a shelf saying, do I need to buy a new shelf, or can it fit there, and does it make sense there? Right? If you need to buy a new shelf, go for it. But what I did was I created a new notebook, and I called it Journal. And my journal notebook is where I put original thoughts, any thoughts, but with a catch. You know how you do your thing every night where you write down what your next things on your list, like your outcomes, I guess you can almost think of them, right? Like, is that pretty much what they are? Outcomes and like your goals?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So I'll do that too. I'll create a note in Evernote, which is like a template. And I store that in another notebook that I call Templates, which also has an asterisk, which sends it to the very top of my notebooks list. And the templates are very limited. There's not many of them. But one of those templates is a journal template. And it's just a set of questions I ask myself. I'll change them maybe once a month so that I get a variety and I don't feel bored. And the questions are things like, okay, what's the goal for, you know, what did you get done today? What are you going to do tomorrow? How did you feel about it all?
And it's that feedback loop with yourself that I've found so powerful. And I've been teaching over the last couple of months with my inner circle students how I do my journal and why I do it and the whole process behind it. And I think the number one reason why it's so effective at helping you become more productive is it's a feedback loop. It's a feedback loop into your own thoughts and insights and everything like that. And you can't hide from yourself. You know, if you're never looking at what you're doing, it's easy to hide and pretend like you're being productive, pretend like you're getting stuff done. But when every night you're reviewing what you did that day, how you feel, why you were or weren't productive, it very, very quickly starts building on itself, and you start getting rid of the excuses, you start eliminating the reasons for, you know, not being productive. And it is such a powerful tool for getting stuff done.
Totally. And like, I found that if I keep repeating the same message every single day, I know that means that A, I need to change something, and B, I probably should stop journaling for a couple of days. Now people will hear that and say, I thought journaling is supposed to be a daily tool. I do it because when I repeat that same message over and over again, and I know I'm in waiting mode, and the reason I'm upset or frustrated is because I'm waiting, repeating it to myself is almost like having a mother who's constantly telling you, did you do it yet? Did you do it yet? Did you do it yet? I know it's on my to-do list. Leave me the hell alone, right? Like, do I really want that? No. So I don't nag myself, right?
Yeah, I like that. It's like, look, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. You don't have to remind me every 6 months.
Right, exactly. I'll get it done. Like, it's just I don't have the bandwidth for it right now, so I'm not going to do it right now. I'm going to do this thing, which has like an 80% impact on my life, right? I'm going to put the energy there. And like, actually, on that note, again, right, Evernote's this really great tool because it does let you separate things in notebooks and keep things kind of apart. And so when I journal, I'm journaling I have my journal that I do every single night, and it has a very specific title to it, which I mean is basically pre-populated in the template. And I think I change like one or two numbers to indicate the date. But the other notes that are in there are notes about how I feel about my health, how I feel about what I think of as the major impacts, right? So if I had a really good meditation that day, I'll quickly take out my phone after I'm done meditating, and I'll enter in my experience and what made it nice. And it just stands alone. Right. And so that way, when I go through my notes at the end of the week and I make sure I look at my notes at the end of the week, I say, OK, this is where I am right now. This is what went well. This is what I really enjoyed. What can I do next week that will bring this again into my life? And the bad stuff, I look at it, but I don't need to reread the bad stuff. I know it. Like, I don't need to know that. What I do need to know is the good stuff. Evernote's great for that. Because you can actually create little tricks. Like, for example, you know how in programming, depending on the language you're using, there's a way to comment something in?
Yep.
right? So I borrowed the syntax from JavaScript for commenting, and I'll add a little comment in as a positive thought. And that way I can quickly find that positive thought. Now people might say, okay, why don't you just use tags? Well, because what if I inserted that positive thought into a note that's already tagged and I don't want to add another bajillion tags to my friggin' list, right? What am I going to do, create a tag every single time? And there's only like, maybe I only use the syntax once and I've already created a tag for it. Like, I don't want to go through that. It's stupid. To me, it's stupid. Anyway, I don't want to add that. I would rather have something I'm already used to doing, which is the way you comment in JavaScript. I've done it before. I'm used to doing it, so I'll do it again. And I can search through it, find the positive thoughts, and say, oh, that was a really good day. I'm really glad that I entered that in there, right?
I feel like good. That's really cool. And I kind of do a similar thing with my paper journaling, where I'm looking for why I had a good day. I'm looking for, you know, why an exercise session went really well. You know, you're looking for those things, and so you can try and repeat them. And it's about, you know, like we've been talking about this whole call, just that constant improvement. You know, what little thing can I do today that will make success more likely to happen automatically? And if you find something, you know, maybe you started your day with a glass of water, and that for whatever reason just seemed to help. Well, then do that the next day. And if that pattern repeats itself, you've now added a small daily habit that's going to add up, you know, over the next 6 months, 6 years, to something a lot bigger than what it feels like right now.
Definitely, man. Definitely. I 100% agree. So like Evernote is a great way to use it. If other people want, like, a great way to keep track of it. If you want to use other tools, there's many other tools. Find the one that suits who you are naturally and give it a chance. Live in the application for a little while and learn about it a little bit, play with it, but always think, is this an extension of who I am? Is this something that grows from my brain? Or am I trying to shove my brain into a tool?
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, for a lot of people listening to this, they're going to be consultants or internet marketers or some kind of, you know, mm-hmm. business around that. And I think for you guys out there, the number one thing you want to have first is some kind of vision or mission, you know, a purpose, a plan, some kind of goals, something you're working towards before you're trying to bolt on some kind of productivity system. Because if you're sitting there currently spinning your wheels, not really knowing what you're doing, being more productive at that is just going to burn you out quicker. It's not going to get you to where you want to go.
Yeah.
So I think tools like this need to be attached to a bigger purpose. You need to have a clear vision of where you're going. You need a mission for what you're doing. You need to wake up and feel purpose each day. And that's when, you know, productivity tends to start happening automagically.
Yeah. And then on top of that, like, you know, like you and I were talking a little bit earlier about the idea, like, between the difference between productivity and effectiveness, right? You know, we talk a lot about being productive, but as you pointed out, being productive isn't always a good thing. You could be productive at doing precisely squat all, like nothing, right? Like, what's the point of that? But you could be effective. And effectiveness is not measured by how much you output. It's measured by the quality of what you output, and kind of like, you know, going back to the martial arts idea, how you kind of adjust and react to things. But you only can adjust and react in martial arts when you know your own body, when you know yourself. That goes back to the idea of that purpose, right? You can be only effective when you have some general idea of what your purpose is. Now, you know, like, it helps to be specific, but your purpose can change. It can adjust. And the more you learn about yourself, the more likely it is to adjust, until finally you kind of get this sense of like, okay, this is who I am. I know it's going to take me maybe months, maybe years to get to where I am going. I'm okay with that because I know who I am. I'm willing to put in the effort.
Yeah, that martial arts metaphor is really powerful. And if anyone who's done martial arts will know, you know, that calmness that you get comes from being in a situation many, many times, and like you said, knowing yourself, knowing what to look for, you know, knowing the signs, for example, that a punch or a kick is coming. And that's why mm-hmm. you can be so comfortable in what might be a very confronting or kind of dangerous situation, because you've been there, you know, you've practiced that situation 100 times before, and you can see the signs for when a punch is coming. You know which way to move to avoid it, you know how to block it or adjust it. And you'll find the same kind of thing will happen when you take that martial arts mindset into your business, where you know, it's that constant daily practice. It's knowing where the bad things come from. It's knowing, you know, how you react in certain situations and learning to become more powerful in those situations.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely, man. Agree.
Fantastic. Mate, this has been an absolutely fantastic chat. We've been going for almost 2 hours now. I'm not sure how long we've been recording for, but yeah, just about time we wrap up. Where can people find out more about you or interact with you? I'm sure we'll have some questions down below if you're happy to answer there, but where else can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check me out on Twitter. If you go to twitter.com/Omar Kafaji, which you guys can find the spelling for.
We'll have a link down below.
There'll be a link because I don't expect you guys to figure out how to spell an Egyptian last name. You can also check out my actual Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Kafaji. And my page is public. It's not a fan page. It's just my normal profile. You can follow me. You can add me. You can do whatever. I'm a very, like, if you want to talk to me, talk to me. Ask me questions. I just like to help people out where I can. And you'll find that I'm not scary. and that's, you know, there's a couple of things I've got in the pipeline. I've been, Kyle and I were talking about earlier, totally swamped with stuff. But I've got some really cool stuff. I can't wait to get out there for people. So if you guys are interested in learning a little bit more about this kind of thing, and approaching productivity and effectiveness in particular, with a mind towards psychology first rather than technology first, I hope you guys will follow me and I'll get to know you guys a little bit better.
Awesome, mate. Can't wait to see what you've got in the pipeline.
Yeah, me too.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, buddy.